You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Well, welcome back to another podcast episode. Today, I have the pleasure to speak with Tyler Gearing about his house hack in Arvada. So a couple months ago, he and I grabbed a cup of coffee just to talk real estate. But as we got into details about his house hack, I was really impressed with what he's done with it, the returns, and I asked him to come on the podcast so we could dive into the details and hopefully others can learn from what he's doing. So Tyler, thank you for joining us. To start things off, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I guess we'll start. I grew up and went to school in Minnesota. I really got into real estate when I noticed, I guess, how young my landlords were and how many properties they owned. A lot of my college landlords had 20, 25 properties. And then my senior year, I picked up Rich Dad Poor Dad like a lot of other people and became hooked. After college, I started working for an apartment complex investment company. Really learned a lot more about real estate through them. And eventually made the move to Denver, where I worked for another apartment complex investment company.
So was it a coincidence that you ended up working for an apartment investment company, or was this part of a bigger plan or bigger picture from reading Rich Dad Poor Dad?
No, it came from Rich Dad Poor Dad. I was hooked and I knew I wanted to work in the real estate industry, pushed into the field.
Let's see. So that was when you were in college. So how old are you now? Because you're still in your, what, mid-20s, right?
Yeah, I'm 26 now.
So just, I want to give everyone perspective out there listening. Did Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that trigger the interest in real estate, or what exactly that trigger and kind of just kind of share that path that it set you on?
Yeah, more investing and real estate in general. It just opened my eyes, I guess, to how profitable and, you know, how you may not have to work for the rest of your life. You can retire early through real estate.
So as you started your process, because I've, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad for me, I read that book years ago and that was the thing that set me on my path, but I've met a lot of people who read the same book, had the same realization that you and I have, but very few people actually go out there and take action or take any major steps towards reaching those goals. What was different for you, or what follow-up information did you go to actually start implementing that? Because that's what I'm very curious about. Why are you out there taking action? A lot of other people, they hear it, they read the exact same message, but they don't go out there and have this, you know, start doing work.
Yeah, it's a tough question. I know I've passed the book along to many other people and not many of them seem to really take it and use it. They're all very interested in it, but I guess it was just kind of grit and just the drive to see it through and, you know, really just to grab my first property and give it a try.
So your property is in Arvada, right?
Yes.
So what part of Arvada is it? Like, what are the major, you know, cross streets or what area is it in?
So it's about 74th and Wads.
And why did you pick Arvada?
Well, it came down to just my criteria when I was looking for a house hack. Denver core was a little too pricey. It was a lot harder to make the numbers work. My criteria going into it was I was looking to live free. And I was also looking to add value. So I was looking to get 20, I was trying to get 20K in equity through forced appreciation. So that pushed me out a little bit into the suburbs where the numbers just seemed to work a little better.
So you were mainly, it was mainly numbers driven, not picking markets and a bigger picture, but it's just mostly numbers that drove you out there?
Yeah, well, numbers drove me to the suburbs. And then I just really liked the Arvada area. It has Old Town Arvada. And the commute to downtown Denver was a lot better than the places I was looking at in like Lakewood or Aurora.
So tell us about finding this house. Like, just, I mean, was it a, how many houses did you put offers in? Just kind of walk us through that story from when you actually started actively seeking it to when you actually closed on the property.
So yeah, I started looking right away when I moved here, late 2016. I took probably 9 months, 8 or 9 months. And I was really trying to dial in. Originally, I was looking for duplexes and I just couldn't seem to get the numbers to work. And then it led me off to the strategy that I'm using right now, which is rent by the room. And I started realizing that I could not only live for free, but I could also cash flow if I was 4+ bedrooms.
Well, I know you're a numbers guy. So do a, if you can, like, what were the numbers like on a duplex versus what you're doing now? Because I talked to a lot of people and a lot of people want to find a duplex, but as you're saying, they can't find numbers work. So what are the, like, what were the differences that you were seeing?
Well, going into it, I came from Minnesota where I could find a duplex. I initially started looking there and I could find duplexes with me living in the other one side, $400, $500 a month cash flow. And I was seeing in Denver, I would be paying out $200 to $400 a month in cash flow.
Would that be just you living on your side of the duplex and not renting out rooms?
On my side. I also did look into renting out a bedroom on my side as well, but it just maybe would break even, but typically not.
And like, how many offers did you have to put in until you found the place you were in?
So surprisingly, I only put in maybe 3 or 4 offers. It was a lot of looking. So I ended up, I guess I kind of just got a little bit fed up and I just put an offer in. I definitely didn't get my property at a discount, probably overpaid for it, if anything, but it all paid off in the end.
Well, I mean, how much do you think you quote unquote overpaid for it?
So the asking price was $290 and I came in at $300 and I think the next bid below me was probably $295. So, I mean, not necessarily overpaying for it, but just getting an offer accepted in a appealing market.
Yeah, and that's because I've seen a lot of people, they come in and they want to buy a property at a 10% discount, and that's just not the reality of things. And if you do that for months or years trying to find that, you know, you go a year or two sitting on the sidelines and you miss out on potential appreciation, you miss out on the equity paid or the principal pay down. There's a lot of things you miss out on. So was that like a numbers analysis today? We're like, you know what, the sooner I just get my property, even if I pay a few bucks more, it's better? Or are you just like sick and tired of the process and want to get it done with?
No, just the sooner I got in, the better. Because I started looking in the winter. And from the time I started looking over the 9-month period, I watched homes values go up 10 plus thousand. And it wasn't doing me any good sitting on the sidelines. So, and then it really ramped up for the summer. And yeah, I realized that if I wanted a house on market, I was going to have to put in an aggressive offer.
So you said you moved here in late 2016. You looked for also, what did you actually close on your house?
No, so I actually moved here in late 2015. I closed June 2016.
Okay, so June of 2016, you got this place. And I remember when we were talking about this a while ago, you did some work to it. I can't recall the details you did, but paint us a picture about what the condition of the property when you bought it and what you did, you know, what you did to it ultimately.
Yeah, so the property was built in 84 and it was pretty much all original. It had a lot of deferred maintenance. Some of the siding was falling off. Kitchen cabinets were broken. Old vinyl flooring. Original carpet. So it was pretty distressed. It needed a full update.
But it was livable or was it like a complete like...
Not ideally. I ended up living in it. Wasn't the greatest situation, but it was livable, yeah.
And I recall you did a lot of the work yourself, right, on fixing up the property?
Yeah, so I wanted to really learn the rehab process. So I ended up doing 90% of the work myself, which consists of a lot of nights and weekends and a lot of YouTube videos.
I know that process. It's amazing what you can learn on YouTube. I'll say that much.
It really is.
But let me ask you this. So you, before you bought this house, did you have much construction or handyman experience before you did this?
No. Really, none at all. I had installed a door once and I installed it incorrectly. I didn't have a gap for the expansion and I did a backsplash tile.
So when you were walking through this property, since you know you don't have a ton of experience in there, how were you able to determine like the scope of work, how much it would cost, and if it was within your ability to do so?
I mean, it was estimates, a lot of estimates, which is, I mean, I'm in my industry, I've been an analyst for a few years, so estimating costs is a lot of what I do, and I just did a lot of research and talked to a lot of flippers in the area and just kind of got ballpark room by room, what it's going to cost for materials, what it's going to cost for labor, and I ended up being within a couple $1,000s of my estimate on the budget, so it turned out pretty well.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive, man. So what was your original estimate? Like, can you kind of break down what you're estimating and just what all it needed?
Yeah, so my original estimate was about $28,000 and it needed everything. So that's all new flooring, all new paint, baseboards, kitchen, all new baths. And the basement was not finished. It had rough-in plumbing, but it needed a bathroom. It needed, and I ended up putting up 2 more bedrooms in there. So it needed quite a bit.
And so how long did it take you to complete the work?
Well, originally I started with the upstairs. Turned out the upstairs, I had the cabinets ordered before I even closed on the house. So The upstairs went really quick. That probably took about a month and a half, actually, to get the upstairs, new kitchen, flooring, paint, all that, new bathroom. Yeah, so it was a quick turnaround, and I ended up taking a lot of time off work and just powering through it. But I had it rented, the whole upstairs, within the first month.
So you bought this place with the unfinished basement. What's the layout like, and what was the initial, how many bedrooms and bathrooms set up?
So upstairs, it's 3 bedrooms, 2 baths. There's a master bedroom with a bath, and then kitchen, living room. And then the basement was just a clean slate. There was nothing down there, just a laundry.
And so what were you able to talk about renting out those? Because I'm assuming you lived in the master bedroom or the master suite?
Yep.
Okay, so what were the rents like on those other two bedrooms? Because you just did, you said bedroom by bedroom, right?
Yeah. So I looked at primarily just Craigslist for room rentals, and the asking rate was anywhere from $600 to $700. I ended up putting them in at $650, and it got a lot more attention than I ever thought. And this is before the remodel was even done. I didn't even have any pictures up. So I knew there was a demand at that point. And I just went through screening and found tenants right away.
So, I mean, how did you screen your tenants? Like, what was your process?
Well, it's progressed. Before, it was, now I'm using a company called SmartMove, do a background check and credit check, income check. I also look through their social media. I do Google searches, things like that, check references.
If you don't mind me asking, like, what was your initial screening process?
It was just like, wow, you want to rent my room? Okay.
I was
in my head at that point. So, I mean, with this whole rehab, taking time off of work, and I didn't even have pictures. Like I said, I didn't know if I was going to be done in time by when the lease started. So,
and did any major issues come up of your loose screening process?
No, there are actually no issues. It's been surprising. It's worked out surprisingly well. I haven't had any issues with tenants, and I've actually become good friends with a lot of the people that move in now. So
it's one thing to have the landlord-tenant relationship, but it's a different thing once you kind of mix in, you know, personal and business. Has that caused issues or friction anyway?
No, not really. Yeah, I guess there's like a fine balance. But I mean, for me, it hasn't really caused any issues. Everyone is pretty happy to just be living in a nicer home, in a nicer neighborhood, paying, you know, $650 in Denver.
And do you have them sign like a long-term lease or month to month?
So I do a 6-month lease, just so the idea behind it is just to not have people that are need a very temporary spot. I'm looking for people that want to stay longer term. So my lease starts 6 months on a 6-month term, and then it converts to month to month.
And do you have them ever sign like a 1-year lease afterwards, or is it just good month to month after that initial 6 month?
Yeah, it just goes month to month after that. So
let's talk about the basement. The upstairs, is this like a split level? Like, what's the layout of the house?
It's just a ranch home with a basement. So it's got a walkout basement, which was nice. So I didn't have to deal with making egress windows, which was a big plus.
So you got the basement. How did you do the remodel down there? Or not even remodel. How did you build the basement out, I should say?
I was going to build 1 bedroom and go from there. And I went through the process, pulled the permits, drilled the plans myself, kind of got up to speed on just what it takes and what the city wants. And I finished that.
Well, let me ask you there, like how, because that can be intimidating for a lot of people. Like, how was the process of getting the permits, drawing the plans? Like, what does that involve? And what was the timeline of that?
So it wasn't too bad. It does slow things down quite a bit, getting inspections and drawing up plans is pretty simple. They have a packet specifically for finishing basements on their website, and it really walks you through everything. I had to learn a few things. And so the walls have to be floating in the basement. So that was something I wasn't familiar with, and just fire blocking and all that kind of stuff. But if you break it down piece by piece, it's really not that much to learn or deal with.
So how long did it take you from the initial permit application to actually get the permit so you could start building?
So the permits were approved within a couple of days. It was just drawing up the plans and, you know, a lot of phone calls with the city, making sure I had everything right. And then it was approved and I started framing and going from there.
And so you do all the framing yourself and the floating walls and all that?
Yeah.
So just lots of YouTube videos?
Lots of YouTube videos. And I mean, it definitely got easier over time once you got the hang of it. And after doing the upstairs, I was a little bit more comfortable with just what I could do and what I couldn't do, my abilities with construction, I guess.
And so how long did it take you to finish out the basement?
Took me maybe 3 months or so, just working nights and weekends.
And so you guys still share the main kitchen and living space up there, right? You didn't build out an entirely separate living space down there?
I didn't end up splitting it like a duplex or building a second kitchen down there. It seemed to work just fine. And initially I thought, hey, even if it doesn't work, I'll do it for a year and it'll pay for most of, for a year or 2 years, that extra bedroom would pay for my basement remodel. And I could go to, you know, four bedrooms or whatnot.
And was the basement remodel part of your initial $28,000 in fix-up cost?
Yeah, surprisingly.
And so what was like the 10% of work that you didn't do yourself?
Right away, I hired a handyman to do a good portion of one of the bathrooms upstairs, just because I was on a time crunch. I had renters coming in and I didn't really know what I was doing. So I had a handyman do that. And then downstairs, I hired out the electrical and the drywall.
And something actually, you said a few minutes ago, since the basement's a walkout basement, you didn't have to do egress windows. And I don't know what the rules are for Avada. So does that mean like, as long as the bedrooms in the basement have an egress point through that walkout basement door, they don't need their own egress window in each bedroom?
No, originally that's what I was thinking, but the house actually just had windows that were up to code that were above ground.
And you know, is that still required by the city?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk some numbers here. So you got the whole basement remodeled out now. And actually, when did you finish the basement portion?
Till probably a year after I owned the property. I took a little break between the top, finishing the upstairs before I started the basement, because I wasn't originally sure if I wanted to do it. And then I started looking into getting a second property. And I was like, wait, I have two bedrooms that would rent at $650 a piece downstairs if I just put a little bit more work into it. So I ended up going through with it.
And so do you rent all your bedrooms out? It sounds like $650 a piece.
Yep.
And I remember when we were having coffee, I don't want to say the number because I don't want to get it wrong, but what was your, once everything was remodeled and the basement built out, what's your cash on cash return?
So my cash on cash return with me living there in the master bedroom is 19%. But my cash on cash, I plan on getting another one and moving out and renting out the master bedroom. And then at that point, my cash on cash will be 37.
So you're at 19% cash on cash return while you're living there for free.
While I'm living there, yes.
Dude, that is awesome.
Yeah.
I know you got a background in finances. So what are the metrics you use to evaluate properties? What cash on cash, cap rates, like what do you generally use to evaluate?
I primarily focus on cash right now. That seems to be my favorite metric. But I usually just look at properties with kind of a gut check for, say, the 1% rule and do a dive in from there.
So when you move out of this property, I'm assuming you'll do the same thing, buy another house, live in it again, and repeat?
Yeah. And for this one, I'm actually hoping to do less of a rehab and boost my cash on cash to somewhere near 40 or 50 just by buying a home that is basically move-in ready, just a five-bedroom.
So before I actually went diving into that with you, but before, so are you going to continue renting out your current place room by room when you move out? Or are you going to do that more as towards a traditional, you know, rental to a family?
No, I'm going to keep it room by room. I'll probably have one of the current tenants right now. I'll probably give a reduction of rent to be kind of a property manager on that. So
he'll collect the rent and take care of just all those little odds and ends?
Yeah, just a little upkeep and just making sure all the repairs are in check. But I still have most of the management. I don't know how scalable the strategy is, but after the numbers on my first one, I figured it's working well for now. So I'll try it and try and get another one and see how it works after I move out.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't worry about it being very scalable right now. I mean, I don't know anywhere else you're going to 19% cash on cash return. So
yeah, it works pretty well.
So for your next property, what's your timeline on there? Is this like something you want to do in 2018 or?
Yeah, so I'm partnered on a fix and flip right now. So I've got that going and I'm trying to do another house hack still in 2018 and then potentially one more fix and flip.
Oh, cool. Well, let's talk about one of these fix and flips. What can you share about that?
I guess I was kind of put in a good position to fix and flip after doing all that rehab myself. I found a good friend of mine who was looking at a fix and flip in Virginia Village, asked me if I wanted to partner on it. I ran the numbers. It looked like I could get about a 28% cash on cash return on it. So we jumped in and we're about a couple weeks deep into it right now. Just did a lot of the demo work, but a lot more work to go.
And are you doing a lot of the work yourself?
No, we're hiring most of it out. I help with the demo. I don't plan on doing much of the work at this point.
Okay. But you'll be hands-on. You know how to manage the contractors now since you've done it yourself?
Right. Yeah.
And what's your estimated timeline? Because you said you're a few weeks into that?
Yep.
And so what's the timeline for completing it?
Yeah. Total timeline is we budgeted for about 6 months. We're hoping to get it out in the spring market. So.
And no major curveballs yet with when you're demoing stuff? No surprises behind anything?
No surprises yet. We're removing some load-bearing walls, so I've never had to use a structural engineer. We've gotten estimates, though, so it should go smoothly. We'll slow things down with the permits and stuff, but that's all in the budget.
So, okay. And if you don't mind me asking, like, are you guys using hard money to finance it or just doing personal, like a personal loan?
Yes, we just did hard money on the purchase price, and then we're putting up the money for the rehab.
Going back to your first house hack, I want to ask a couple more questions on there. If you could go back and do it again, what would you have done differently?
I would have finished my basement out right away, and then I would have been on to my second house hack by this point. I guess I would have just powered through it.
So what advice can you give for people that have not done their first house hack yet, but they want to? Like, what advice can you give them?
I mean, learn the numbers, but don't be afraid to just jump in, dive into it, because you can only learn so much just sitting on the sidelines. And a lot of people don't ever jump in and get their first deal. So,
and so as you move on to your second property, do you plan on staying in Nevada, or what's the area you're looking at now?
Yeah, so I'm looking at Arvada, and then I'm also looking at, I guess it's considered Denver. It's up on Pecos and 36. There's a little pocket there. There's a lot of new development. It's called Midtown, and there's the new Westminster Light Rail. So I think it's a good area. Prices are a little cheaper than Nevada. So I'm hoping to buy a house completely fixed up, ready to rent in that area.
And so even buying a turnkey place ready to go, you can hit, you think, a 40%-ish cash on cash return?
Yeah. So I also factored in, I have my real estate license, so I will take the commission and use that towards the funding. With that factored in, yes.
And that's also with you living there for free, I'm assuming.
No. So that cash on cash will be, I'm looking at it for as if I were to move out.
Okay. So after a year or two?
And rent that room. So that's after the year requirement for my loan.
Now, I'm curious. I've talked to a few people and I've heard very mixed things as they've talked to their loan officers. Have you had any, and maybe you haven't even talked to your loan officer yet, but do you see any issues with, you know, doing the strategy? Loan officers throwing any red flags your way?
No. I mean, I'm hitting all the requirements and this strategy is completely legal within the zoning in the cities that I'm looking at. So there's nothing against renting to the amount of unrelated parties that I'm renting to. And I can get it insured, no problem, and I don't see any issues.
So what's your big picture plan here with real estate? Obviously, you got your first house hack done, another one coming up, a couple fix and flips happening this year. You got some plans. Like, what's the big picture you got?
Yeah, right now I'm just trying to build capital and then move it into, you know, as much passive income as I can get. So I work in the multifamily industry. I'd really like to get my hands on a mid-size apartment complex in the next couple of years. As of right now, I'm pretty priced out of Denver in terms of mid-size apartment complexes, but I may be looking out of state. I've been looking a little bit in Kansas City and some other markets.
So would the plan to be to, like, you know, build up single family home portfolio, then sell or 1031 into an apartment?
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I would sell or not. I mean, I'm going to have a couple house hacks. And then, like I said, I'm working on fix and flips right now. So I'm not sure if I'll need to sell. I have a HELOC on my primary right now, which, you know, I'm able to use my fix and flips and it's at a reasonable rate. So I could also use that towards an apartment complex. I'm bullish long term on Denver, so I really would like to hold properties here. Just looking for a bigger cash on cash return. Yeah, cash on cash return.
Yeah, talk about that some more, because I know, I mean, you know, that's the industry, and you're in the apartment world, and I hear some people that are very bullish on Denver long term. I mean, I am myself personally, but I hear a lot of people say, "Oh my gosh, Denver's gone up so much the last 6 years; it can't keep going on." Why are you bullish on Denver?
For a few reasons, but I mean, I'm hooked on Denver. I moved around to a few different states. I don't have any plans of leaving, and from everyone else I talk to, they're in the same position. And if you go into any given room and ask how many people grew up or were born in Colorado, it's usually very few. It's an appealing city to live in. It's just not necessarily at this point the best cash flow city. I'm not looking to purchase. I mean, I'm making the numbers work pretty well on a house hack perspective, but they get a little thinner when I have to get an investment loan, put down 20% and all that stuff. So I've found a couple other markets that have been a little bit more flat throughout this boom cycle, and they seem to cash flow. So
let's talk about you getting your real estate license. I didn't know you got that. So I know I talked to a lot of investors. They debate whether they should get it or not. What was your thinking for getting your license?
I looked into the numbers, and it was really cheap. It wasn't expensive to get a license. I had actually gone down. I'd started the process when I was like 18 in Minnesota. I'm pretty familiar with real estate. So it ended up costing me, I think, maybe $1,500 all said and done. I realized that in the price range that I was looking for my next house hack, it would pay itself off and put another, $7,000-$8,000 towards a down payment on my property.
And so did you just get your license to basically do your own deals through, or do you plan on, helping a couple of friends and family buy houses as well, bring in extra capital?
Originally, it was just to get, to represent myself for investment properties. And, if I ever wanted to sell the property that I'm in right now, it would just make sense to have. But I have been approached by a few different people, and I may use it at that angle too and represent people.
So what are the, I'm curious, because I know you did, you're very much a numbers guy. It's about $1,500 to get your license. I mean, even overlooking a couple years of just doing your own deals through it, like the monthly fees, and there's fees with your license and stuff. Those didn't take out too much of too much of your overall cash?
No. So I found a brokerage that's just, no frills, low cost. I don't have any monthly fees through them. They charge a flat fee per transaction. So I pay the MLS fee, and then I have, at this point, just the MLS fee and errors and omissions, which is pretty affordable.
Great. Well, you got any just final thoughts or parting thoughts for our listeners out there?
Not specifically. I would just say that from my experience and just working in the industry, it's a very exciting and a very powerful way to, build financial freedom or build wealth. I'm very excited to push forward and see where real estate takes me.
So Tyler, what's the best way for people to reach you?
Email is good for me. My email address is tylergiering@gmail.com.
And I will put that in the show notes so everyone can just click their phone and email Tyler. And I'm assuming people can, you're up for grabbing coffee or beer to talk about house hacking, partnering on potential deals. Like, what are you happy to talk with people about?
Always happy to talk real estate in general, but if anyone wants to grab a cup of coffee or a beer and talk about house hacking or if anyone has any potential deals they would like to partner on or talk about partnerships in general, feel free to reach out to me.
Great. And guys, I'd recommend everyone out there, take him up on that offer. Like, he's out there making stuff happen. Great guy to learn from, great guy to know. All right, Tyler, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Chris.